gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the high-quality recording of free speech. I'm making a reference to Skype, but I'm not going to go into it. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. The operator is standing by. And we've got Mark Collett. This is our Monday show. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's good to be here. And boy, have we had an incredibly crazy weekend. We've got an awful lot to talk about. I'm not sure where to start, but I'll let you kick things off.
Okay, so I don't know the latest of the past 8 hours, but we've got Iran and Israel, and they're shooting rockets at each other, shooting missiles, and they're doing damage on each other. It seems that the Israelis, with their more, well, with their American-supplied weaponry, are inflicting more damage on the Iranians than the Iranians are inflicting on the Israelis. But the thing is, the Iranians are, enough of their projectiles are getting through the Iron Dome defense system and Patriot missile defense systems, and you're seeing images coming out of Tel Aviv, coming out of Haifa and elsewhere, where buildings are being hit and buildings are being destroyed. And I think even the Israeli defense ministry has been hit. And so there's enough damage that Iran's inflicting that even if the Israelis are inflicting more damage on Iran, the thing is, Iran's a much, much bigger country, and it can absorb more damage. It can sustain more damage than the Israelis can. So it's hard to know, when you get down to it, who's got the upper hand in terms of being able to meet their objectives. The objective of Iran, presumably, is not to have its government brought down. The stated objective of Israel is to destroy the Iranian nuclear capability. That's a stated objective, but the real objective seems to be to drag the United States into a war that would destroy the Iranian government and lead to regime change. That's my opening salvo. I'll kick it over to you. What are you seeing and hearing?
Well, it's interesting because, I had a lot of things I was going to say, but you've also said a lot of things, and I want to sort of respond to one of them, and that is that apparently, now, look, I'm not shilling for Donald Trump. I'm certainly not going to be sat here today, you know, praising the man. You know, what he's done and what he's trying to embroil America in seems to be the very opposite of what he was elected for. You know, people voted for Trump because Trump was meant to be this anti-war candidate. People wanted the anti-war candidate. They didn't want the pro-war candidate. Yet what they seem to be getting is the pro-war candidate. And that's interesting. But what's also interesting is Trump and his sort of side, because look, I know Israel and America are definitely on the same side, and I'm not trying to pretend that they're not. I'm not going to sit here and sort of insult anyone's intelligence and say, look, they're definitely different, because, you know, they are obviously the sort of the golden allies in all of this. And when I say allies, I say that as sort of rolling my eyes, because Israel is the ally of no one. It uses other regimes, but it's certainly not their allies, and it certainly wasn't Donald Trump's ally when he got snaked by the regime, when he got was beaten by beaten in inverted commas by Biden, and there was a stop the steal thing. Netanyahu didn't come out on his side then, did he? He certainly didn't. Now I think the interesting thing here, or the thing that I find pretty interesting anyway,
is that Trump has said, and you said the stated regime, the stated sort of
stated objectives.
Yeah. But the stated objective is interesting because Trump has actually come out and said, and whether he's, I don't know why he's saying this, because people will be saying different things for different reasons. So Trump is now claiming that he was never for peace, and his whole I'm for peace thing was all basically just a play. It was a play because he's basically said, now whether it was or whether it wasn't, we'll never know, because, you know, Trump could be one of those guys who's essentially trying to save face. You know, it could all be a play. It could be, you know, Trump could very well have played everybody and not really gone for peace. But, you know, because at one point Trump did feign sort of a slight falling out with Israel and said, look, you know, they need to come into line, that he wanted a peaceful solution. Now he's claiming that that was all of a bit of a joke. But he has come out and said, or at least a feint, you know, so that Iran would drop its guard. So he's claiming now that he was complicit in the in this by means of helping to deceive the Iranian regime into thinking, you know, that there could be a peaceful solution. And if that's true, that's obviously utterly despicable. And it says a lot about Trump as a person. You know, if he's actually done that, that says an awful lot about Trump as a person, because Trump is someone that people did vote for because they wanted peace, and rightfully so. And we'll probably talk about this a bit more later. But Tucker Carlson has been absolutely blistering against Trump in all this, and one of the big things in this morning's press here in the UK was MAGA civil war, as a lot of MAGA influencers are turning on Trump over all of this, which is very interesting. But the thing I was going to say about your initial commentary is that yes, Israel are saying that the thing is nothing about regime change. It's basically just, you know, getting rid of their ability to build a nuke. Now, they've been saying that for two decades, so, you know, you can take that all with a pinch of salt. But Trump has kind of counter-signaled that and said that, you know, they initially came to him and said they wanted to take out the Ayatollah and the entire Iranian leadership, and that was going to be basically decapitated, take out the Ayatollah, take out the Iranian leadership, and there was going to be a situation where they were going for complete and utter regime change via essentially a means of decapitation. That is what has been said, and Trump has come out very sort of brazenly and said that was their plan, but he vetoed that plan. He said, no, that's going too far. Now, again, at this point, we don't know what's a play and what's real. Did Trump veto that? Did Trump know they were going to attack? Is Trump saving face? Who knows? You know, at this point, I would say pretty much all bets are off in finding out initially what the truth of the matter is. But I think one thing we can all agree on is Israel is a murderous Zionist regime that is destabilizing the Middle East yet again. America is complicit in that, although America has not been involved in terms of doing any of the fighting yet. Today, the latest news is that the US aircraft carrier Nimitz is heading to the region very rapidly. Trump has repeatedly warned the Iranians that if anything happens, anything, the slightest thing happens to any US base or US interest, they will be then in the war, and there won't be anything that Iran can do. You know, the regime will be toppled. So, you know, do not strike Americans. Now, that always makes me very nervous when somebody would speak like that, because it's almost like Trump's laying that line in the sand for there to be some kind of USS Liberty false flag event that drags America into the war. And, you know, obviously that wouldn't be the first time we've seen something like that. You can look at USS Liberty, you can look at the Levon affair. Israel has got a history of false flag attacks on supposed allies in order to bring those allies closer and into a conflict which has nothing to do with them. So there's a lot of interesting things going on there. But one thing that does seem very interesting, and I'm
sort of holding back my commentary on this, and I'll explain why. It's not because I'm cucking, but it does seem as if Israel has actually, for the first time ever, been hit in a meaningful way. But the reason I'm not making commentary on this, or not really saying anything about it, is because I'm sort of from the school of thought where I don't think Israel does get hit. So what you tend to see happen is Israel unleashes a barrage of incredibly technologically advanced missiles and weapons. Those missiles and weapons cause absolute total destruction in the place where they land, at which point Israel is pretty happy with what they've done, and sometimes you'll get a little bit of a retaliation, but it's kind of like comparing, you know, tactical state-of-the-art laser-guided missiles with bottle rockets. And a few things land in Israel. The Israelis then sort of claim, oh, Yvay, you know, we've been hit hard, we've had civilian casualties, this is completely unacceptable. America steps in and says, oh, it is completely unacceptable, and that's the end of it all. Whereas there's lots of people sort of enthusiastically saying, you know, Israel's going to get its comeuppance here, talking up Iran's military capability, talking up this sort of axis of resistance, hypersonic missiles. I don't know. But I'm certainly not going down that route myself, because I just feel that Israel has a habit of essentially outclassing, outgunning everyone in the region. And not only does it have a habit of doing that and a history of doing that, but it also has incredibly good spy networks and intelligence networks that allow it to strike with a degree of accuracy and precision and hit the right targets in a way that other regimes simply never managed to do. So I don't know. And I've got to say this as well, this is the final thing I say, which is a slightly different topic, but it's a bit of a diversion. I remember when October the 7th attacks happened, there was lots of people in the nationalist sphere that thought that that was a big blow to Israel. And I've looked back on that now, and I believe that the October 7th attacks on Israel was something Israel knew about in advance. I think the sort of Israeli peace activists at the event that got targeted, I think they were sacrificial lambs. I don't think it was a false flag, because obviously clearly people did die, but I do think Israeli intelligence would have known about that long in advance. And I do think it was something that happened in order to allow Netanyahu to do what he's done in Gaza. Because now every time somebody says in the conservative media, well, look, what you're doing in Gaza amounts to war crimes, you know, the chirping response is always, oh, but they started it. Do you remember the horrors of October the 7th? Do you remember the babies that were put inside the ovens? And you're just listening to it all thinking to yourself, oh, gosh, it's almost too perfect, isn't it? It's almost as if all of this is playing out exactly the way they, and when I say they, I'm obviously talking about the Israelis, the Zionists, the way they want it to play out. So I'm kind of a mentality at the moment where I'm not one of these people who's like, well, nothing ever happens and nothing ever will happen. But I'm not somebody who's dancing around at the moment believing that this is going to be the end of Israel, or that finally, Israel's power over the West is going to be broken. I don't think that's going to happen at all. And I'm a lot more sort of concerned that if Iran does keep retaliating, and I'm not saying Iran has no right to retaliate, they of course do, but my big concern is if they do keep retaliating, eventually this will draw America in, and we will head towards some unbelievable all-out war. And if that was the case, and that does happen, I think the bloodshed would be far greater, and Iran as a country would be completely and utterly flattened. And I know it's a huge place, and I know it's a lot harder to invade than somewhere like Iraq, but let's just say we did end up with a war, and we did end up with American boots on the ground. I think not only would we end up in a bad place in terms of you know, conflict, life lost, you know, money wasted, Western troops suffering. But I also think we would end up seeing a huge influx of migrants coming into the West, which would primarily be here from Iran. And, you know, just like we did in the Iraq and recent Syrian conflicts, you know, those things did not work out well, either for the country being attacked, nor for European countries that ended up bearing the brunt of the migrant crisis.
Well, and then there's another dimension that needs to be looked at, and that's the international dimension, because while Israel's got the firm, well, it's got the support of the United States, and the firmness of that support is hard to exactly express, because on the one hand, you know, Donald Trump has tried to paint himself as the most pro-Israeli president ever, and yet there's Israel has never pulled lower. Support for Israel has never been lower in the United States, and so Trump has domestic. He's got some domestic constraints on him. His own base is anti-war. The non-Trump part of the Republican Party is very pro-war. The Democrats, who make up virtually half of the Senate and virtually half of the House of Representatives, is just anti-Trump. And while the politicians themselves are pretty bought off by Israel, their voters have become majority anti-Israel. So you've got that. That's one constraint. But then also in the international scene, you've got Vladimir Putin, who is he and the Russian government have condemned Israel, and Vladimir Putin's been working the phones. He's talked directly to Trump, probably scolded it, probably gave him an earful. You know, Trump, it's hard to know because we don't know exactly what was said, but you know, from tweets or Truth Social posts that that Trump's made, Trump was he was not speaking boisterously regarding Putin, and then Putin has spoken to the Iranian leadership, and he's also apparently had a phone call with Netanyahu. Now, people might say, "Well, what does that mean?" It's hard to know exactly what to expect from that. But I grew up during the Cold War, and during the Cold War, the United States and the Soviet Union were very much constrained by each other. And you didn't have major wars in the Middle East, and you didn't have direct confrontations between the United States and Russia. You had constraints because the nuclear the potential of nuclear exchange was taken seriously. It was, you know, mutually assured destruction. This was taken seriously, and you did have constraints, and you would have times where, I guess most notably, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis, where there was communication between the leaderships of the countries, and they said, you know, you do this, and it's Armageddon, and these threats were taken seriously. The American leadership,
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full 1-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
Are you really prepared? There's one critical piece most people forget. When disaster strikes, the most powerful survival tool isn't in your hands, it's in your head. But here's the hard truth. Knowledge disappears fast when the grid goes down. That's why we created the Preparedness Tablet, the first and only off-grid digital library designed specifically for survival situations. We've done the work for you. This rugged, portable tablet comes preloaded with a massive library of practical knowledge, food preservation and storage, emergency medical care, off-grid living and homesteading, security, defense, and more. It's indexed, searchable, organized, and powered by a free solar charger, so you'll never be without it. It also comes with a protective hard case, and you can upgrade it with supplemental survival files and EMP protection. Whether it's a power outage, social unrest, or a full-blown crisis, this tablet gives you instant access to skills that save lives. From treating wounds to growing food, even saving cherished family documents and photos, this preparedness tablet is your silent partner when things go sideways. You can't know it all, but you can carry it with you. Preloaded with survival knowledge, runs 100% off-grid, backup and store your own files, lightweight, portable, and solar-powered. Join thousands of Americans closing the last gap in the emergency prep. Visit our website now and get peace of mind in the palm of your hand. The preparedness tablet also makes a thoughtful and potentially life-saving gift. Invest in yourself, protect your family. Visit www.comcoms.link. That's www.comcoms.link. Be ready, be smart, be the one who plans ahead. We also offer custom portable radios that come pre-configured for your local area. Included with these versatile radios is free basic training to get you up to speed quickly on how to use your radio. Visit our website today and learn all about our unique products. Comcoms.link, comcoms.link.
You do this, and it's Armageddon. And these threats were taken seriously. The American leadership. The current generation of Americans who are involved in government, who are in the State Department, probably joined the State Department about the time of the collapse of the Soviet Union or the dismemberment of the Soviet Union or later, and have had their entire careers during American unipolar power. And so they've gotten out of the habit of caring about mutually assured destruction. They've gotten in this habit of thinking American can do whatever it wants and the rest of the world has to suck it up. But it's really not like that anymore. And so you've got the Chinese, we don't know exactly what's the content, but there have been Chinese, at least some Chinese plane that landed in Iran, probably carrying a delegation of officials to talk about this situation. So there's a lot of things. It's hard to know how this is going to work out. There's a lot involved. The Russians absolutely do not want to have an American-assisted Israeli decapitation of Iran, and Trump himself has said that he vetoed the idea of a decapitation of a strike against the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. So it's, I don't know how this is going to work out, but and I don't know if people are going to take, if people in Washington, people in the Congress won't take Putin seriously, but Trump might, and Trump is in direct talks with Putin, and personally, my guess is over the next over the next week until we speak again, most likely scenario is that there will be continued barrages of missiles like we've been seeing, that Iran is not going to strike the United States military bases, of which there are many in the region, and Russia is going to offer itself as a mediator, and we might see movement in that direction. So I'm kicking it back to you now, Mark.
Well, I think all of this is very interesting. I mean, obviously, and it's kind of strange because let's have a look at things domestically, because it's kind of important to see where we are domestically. And I would say that Trump's in a strange position. Now, historically, and we're talking historically here, you would say that the Republican Party were the pro-war faction and the Democrats were the anti-war faction. So pro-war, pro-patriotism were sort of hand in hand. You had like the right wing, yeah, we're going to war, we support the boys, etc. You had the left wing, which was, you know, bring the boys home, this is Western imperialism, this is terrible, etc., etc. And that was just how it was. But interestingly, you now have, and I would say nearly the whole of the Democratic Party's voter base would be united in anti-war sentiment. I would say the whole of their base would be, you know, united with anti-war sentiment. But the Republican base, which,
you know, if the Republicans were going to move forward with this, would want to be in a position where they were completely together on this, that they would need a sizable portion of their base to be sort of behind the idea of war. However, I don't think that's the case. I would say at least, so you've got close to 100% to the point where you would say, you know, the only Democrats that are going to support this war are the bought and sold actual politicians. You know, the activists and the voters would be anti-war. However, I would say now the Republican Party, you know, at best for the establishment, and this is the best case scenario for the establishment, you would say at best it would be 50-50. I mean, it might be worse than 50-50 now. It might be to the point where you could say, actually, it's 60-40 anti-war, because the MAGA movement is very, very influenced by the online kind of, look, we want nationalism, we want a country for our people, but we don't want any more wars, we don't want any more Zog interference, we don't want another Iraq. And I think Iraq is very much still in the minds. It's still in the sort of public zeitgeist. You know, we don't want another Iraq, we don't want another Afghanistan. These things are dirty terms now. Iraq and Afghanistan aren't glorious, are they? People don't look back on them and say, oh, well, you know, those were the days when we had boys in Iraq and Afghanistan and we were fighting the Muslims.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red. A horse is a horse, of course, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Red. Go right to the source and ask the horse, he'll give you the answer that you endorse. He's always on a steady course, talk to Mr. Red.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get More Tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get More Tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, dixierepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Howdy, cousins. This is RBN host Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn, asking you to please support the Republic Broadcasting Network. Every day, RBN's mission is to use our collective voices to spread truth and relevant information, to gain a deeper understanding of the adversary, and to gain knowledge for survival against the gradual erosion of the Republic. But in order to sustain this incredible communications network, RBN needs your financial contributions. To donate, visit republicbroadcasting.org, call 1-800-724-2719, or mail your donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Afghanistan aren't glorious, are they? People don't look back on them and say, oh, well, you know, those were the days when we had boys in Iraq and Afghanistan and we were fighting the Muslims. People don't actually see it like that. Most people say we don't want our boys involved in that. We don't want war. And people who voted for Trump voted for an end to the conflict in Ukraine, and they also realistically voted for no more wars in the Middle East. And for Trump to flip from being, you know, the candidate of peace to the candidate of war, I don't know, that could work maybe, you know, around the time of the First or Second World War, but I don't think it's really going to work now. And seeing people like Tucker Carlson, who, you know, I'm not saying Tucker's the be-all and end-all, but he is one of the huge Republican mouthpieces. You know, if you've got Tucker on your side, that makes things a lot easier, doesn't it? Tucker not being on your side makes things a lot more difficult. And there was that, obviously that was witnessed when Tucker went to Russia and spoke, you know, had an audience with Vladimir Putin. You know, that was a really important point that
was something that wooed a lot of mainstream Republicans into looking at Russia in a different light, because, you know, Putin obviously gave a very, very good account of himself, which is something most American leaders couldn't do. But I think that Tucker coming out and doing this, a large portion of the younger, you know, the younger crowd are also the same. You have these sort of younger people, you know, I'd say like your Nick Fuentes, the Groypers, you have the hard right, the people over, you know, TRS, the Warren Baylogs, people like that. They're going to be against all of this. And I think what you're actually looking at now is a situation where, unfortunately for Trump, this isn't as easy as it would have been at one point. And he can't just, you know, wave a magic wand and say, you know, come on, guys, we're going to war and everyone's marching off to fight. That isn't what's happening. And I think that's what he probably thought would happen. You know, this oxy-military parade he put on at the weekend was really it was an embarrassment. You know, people aren't applauding. You know, his base aren't looking at this saying, wow, this was great. There was a very low turnout for it. There was no real buzz or razzmatazz around it. People weren't like, wow, Trump, you know, 250 years of the American military, Trump wowed us. You know, people were quite the opposite. People seemed quite embarrassed by it. It didn't look good. It didn't look impressive. It wasn't this big show of force. You know, I would say, you know, Trump isn't in the position where he might have thought he would be at this point, where he could just say, look, these are our greatest allies, we've always supported them, they've always supported us, it's time for our boys to do the right thing. Yeah, I don't think that's happening. And that's, I think, a very interesting situation for Trump to be in. And it's probably a situation Trump never thought he would be in at this point. And I should imagine that Netanyahu and others are slightly, I'm not going to say nervous, but are sort of slightly curious to this sort of sea change, because they would have thought Trump would have been a shoo-in. And I always remember Warren Baylog saying, look, the biggest threat that Trump poses is he's the last, you know, he's the only presidential candidate that could potentially get young white men, you know, strapping on boots and equipment and going overseas to fight again. You know, Biden-Harris regime couldn't do that. You know, a black woman in the White House isn't getting young white men to go and fight, but Donald Trump could. But I think Donald Trump is potentially going to have a hard time doing this, because Donald Trump is not seeming to be able to rally the troops. And as I said, this little parade he had, it didn't look impressive. I wasn't watching that thinking, wow, you know, this wasn't something, you know, out of the Third Reich or the Soviet Union at its height. It wasn't even something out of North Korea. It certainly wasn't what they could have done in modern day China. When you see these Chinese military parades now, well, I mean, wow, you know, they really are you know, showing us what a show of force looks like. This wasn't that. Now, again, that could all be a feint. This could all be to make America, you know, America's enemies think it looks weak, and bam, you know, the people parading were, you know, the B team and the A team are on their way over to the Middle East. We simply don't know. But I wouldn't think that kind of parade would have inspired confidence in the Warhawks. And I would think the Warhawks will be taken aback by the amount of civil war there is in the MAGA camp. But adding these figures together, if you've got nearly 100% of the Democrats, so that's rather than 50% of society, let's say 90% of the Democrats are against the war, well, that's 45% of society. And if, you know, the MAGA movement is completely split on this, let's say it's 50-50, you've probably got 25% of Republicans, 50% of Republicans, which is 25% of society, against the war. So you've got 70% of the American public rejecting this war. Now, if that is the actual case, I can't see Trump having anything other than a hard sell. I can't see this being something which he pushes for, and people are like, yeah, we're doing this. You know, this would be something that would really, really undermine his base. Now, you can argue he doesn't need a base anymore because it's his last term, and, you know, whatever happens, he's not getting back in. But I don't think this is going to be as easy a sell for the powers that be than many nationalists thought it would be.
Yeah, and when, you know, when you go through these numbers, well, one of the things you can think about is You were talking specifically about the base, about the voters. In Congress, I think currently the Republicans have a small majority in the House of Representatives. But if you got, I'm just looking at AI right now, and it says Republicans have 220 seats, Democrats have 213. I thought it was even a little bit closer than that. But if that's the case, it would only take four Republicans to side against Trump for an impeachment. There were two impeachments in his first term. Impeachment used to be like extremely rare, but against Trump, he's been subjected to impeachment twice, and so if a vote was held right now, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massey, they wouldn't go along with it. But if he's got more directly involved in this war and it started going in a much more serious direction, it's very, very easy to think that there would be, if it only takes four defectors voting for the other side, four Republican defectors, or maybe eight who just simply abstain from the vote, Trump would be impeached again, because all the Democrats will vote against him. And they'll vote against him not even because of the war, they'll vote against him because he's Donald Trump. So then you would have a trial in the Senate, and the Senate requires a two-thirds majority. So that would be that, and he didn't come close. There really weren't. I guess the first time around, were there any Republican defectors in the Senate? If there were, there was one or two, and it would require about 20 Republican defectors, and that's not likely right now. But I remember 50 years ago when Nixon was when impeachment proceedings were starting to come together. He never got impeached, but he was taking survey of his own Republican Party, which was in the minority. But he saw the writing on the wall, and so who knows? The thing about the Republicans is if you impeach Trump, it's not like a situation in a parliamentary country where if there's a vote of no confidence, then it can force elections and the other side comes in and takes power. If Trump's impeached, then you have President J.D. Vance, and it's very possible that you could have a situation where, for a variety of reasons, there are plenty of Republican senators who say, you know, Trump has just been, he's just been chaos. Vance seems calm. Let's minimize and looking forward to, say, midterm elections. Let's go into midterm elections with a Vance honeymoon, put all this Trump stuff behind us and move forward. That's something that could happen. And Trump, if he's not focused on it, he's probably aware of it, and depending on how the situation develops, he might start focusing on it, because he's been through it twice before, and this is something that would restrain him. So I'm throwing that out there. One last thing, you mentioned the military parade, and if you look at pictures of Trump's military parade compared to anything in Red Square or in Pyongyang or in Tiananmen Square, anything that other countries, Americans don't do military parades. It hasn't been part of our recent history, and so it wasn't impressive. And meanwhile, you had these anti-Trump No Kings demonstrations across America, where you probably had 1 million or 2 million people come out. I was going through Cincinnati, and I saw marchers, and a lot of them. These demonstrations were sponsored by Jewish billionaires, in order to support illegal immigration. But if there's going to be an anti-Trump protest movement, there's at a time when Trump is pursuing a war on behalf of Israel, the potential for that movement to be hijacked or directed, steered in a different direction to make it anti-war as opposed to pro-illegal immigration, that's a very real chance. So I'll kick it back to you, Mark.
Well, I think this is all very, very interesting, and I think, you know, looking at, you know, sort of going forward, I can't see this being popular. I can't see it being popular in America. I can't see it being popular in the UK. I think there's going to be some sort of boomer voters that are like, yeah, flatten it, turn Iran to dust, you know, turn it to glass. There'll be people saying that from, you know, a certain age group. But I don't think that that would be something that is going to be said by, you know, a lot of, you know, a lot of younger people. I think a lot of younger people are going to be completely against this. A lot of younger people are going to be, you know, very, very upset at the thought of some, you know, giant war conflict. And I've got to be honest, I think here in places like the UK, where there is such a sizable and powerful Muslim population, again, they are not going to tolerate this. They are not going to want Britain being involved. Now, I'm well aware that the British government is largely controlled by Zionists, but at the end of the day, Labour are already very unpopular with white working class people. Do they also want to be very unpopular with the Muslim population too and lose the Muslim bloc vote? There's a lot of things to be sort of, there's a lot of things to be looked at here and a lot of things to be analysed. And I would definitely say that, you know, Israel is in a position where it isn't necessarily going to, you know, it's not necessarily going to be plain sailing for Israel on this one. Simply because there are lots of things swirling around in the West which weren't there previously. You know, there are lots of people in the West who now are anti-war. There are lots of Muslims in the West, especially in places like the UK, Germany, France, that are going to be naturally anti-war because they will see this as a war against Islam. And I think there's also going to be a natural animus toward the idea of more war. You know, I don't think we've ever been in a time where war has been a dirtier term, a less popular term, which seems strange because, you know, at the moment, you know, you'd also say at this point in history, there is more violent media, there are more, there's more sort of focus on sort of violence, war, etc., in media, in entertainment. But in reality, people don't actually want that. People are very, very nervous about there being another war, another great big global conflict. So I think there's going to be lots of pushback. And I think the other thing is, and this can't be underestimated, is at one point Israel was largely seen as, you know, the good guys. They were the good guys in the Middle East, according to the West. But that simply isn't the case anymore. I think Israel have burned a lot of the good grace that they had built up. Israel have burned a lot of the casual support they had from people in the West. And at the moment, I would say, Israel is seen as a little bit of a troublesome nation. What's been going on in Gaza has lowered their standing with the public, both in the UK and in America. And I think that's going to hurt them. I think right now is not the optimal time for Israel to be saying, yay, let's go to war. You know, come and fight with us, because they're just not in the position that they were a few years ago. And I think there's going to be lots of people out there who, you know, at one point would have probably been people like Tucker that would have been at one point very, very supportive of Israel, but are now far less supportive of Israel. And you can't just change that. That's something that's going to, you know, that that slide in popularity is something that's taken a long time, but it's not just going to turn around overnight. You're not just going to have a situation where, you know, overnight people are like, oh yeah, support them again. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think what we're going to actually end up seeing is a situation where people are going to have a natural distrust for Israel, and they have kind of painted themselves as the bad guys in terms of this conflict with Palestine. You know, the Palestinians, what they've done to them.
So far and wide, keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
John Moore, the Liberty Man, on RPN from 7 to 10, with highly qualified guests. Monday through Friday, we talk about a range of topics. Day to day, helping you find your way through the chaos in store. John Moore, the Liberty Man, his website is second to none. Visit thelibertyman.com. Remember John Moore, from 7 to 10, and tune in, John Moore, the Liberty Man.
Have a natural distrust for Israel, and they have kind of painted themselves as the bad guys in terms of this conflict with Palestine, you know, the Palestinians, what they've done to the Palestinians has upset a lot of normal people. And at one time, these normies would have all been banging the drum for Israel. Well, they're not banging the drum for Israel now, are they? They are looking at Israel and saying, look, we don't support you anymore. We're not on your side. We think you've committed war crimes. We don't want to march alongside you. This is a lot tougher a sell than it would have been a few years ago, and that's a good thing. And what's more, although America is sending an aircraft carrier to the region, they've got, you know, I think the UK is sending ships to the region as well, as of yet other countries haven't been there stopping the missiles landing in places like Tel Aviv and Haifa. And for the first time that I can remember, looking at the Daily Mail comment sections, there are lots of people commenting, well, you know, you started this, you started throwing the missiles first, you're now getting a little bit back, you've got no right to complain. Well, that wasn't what you would see 10-15 years ago. 10-15 years ago, the comment sections on sites like the Daily Mail would be 100% supportive of Israel, and 100% would have been calling for the harshest, harshest response against Iran. That just isn't the case now. I think people in the West are very critical of Israel now, and they're war-weary. You know, after seeing the way Iraq and Afghanistan turned out, it's too close. You know, people aren't ready. People aren't ready for another war in the Middle East.
Yeah, so I had earlier said, you know, the current round of policy or decision makers don't have the historical experience of dealing with a Soviet Union that was considered serious, that was considered, when the Soviet Union said, don't do something or it's World War III, that they were taken seriously. But they do have the historical memory of the Iraq War, which was extremely formative in the case of Tucker Carlson, because Tucker Carlson started his career working for William Kristol, who is, you know, neocon central, and he was a supporter of the Iraq War, of the American invasion of Iraq, and that was transformative. That was the event that really changed his way of thinking and formed his way of formative. It was a formative event for him, and he is very influential. And Steve Bannon has come out very strongly against saying something like supporting Israel is not America first. Going to war for Israel is not America first. And you know, I guess it was a year or a year and a half ago that Candace Owens, who's still pretty influential, she went off the reservation. So it's a different environment now. But we're pretty much out of time. Do you have any final thoughts, or do you have any things, content that you're going to be posting soon that you want people to be aware of?
Well, yeah, I've got Jared Taylor coming on my show on Wednesday for Patriotic Weekly Review, and I'm continuing to put out an hour-long news roundup every Friday that goes live on my Rumble and my Odyssey, so please check that out if you can, and if you do check it out, I hope you enjoy it. Thank you for having me on. I look forward to seeing you same time next week.
Thank you, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.